And welcome back to 3WBC with Mike O'Connell and Kath Smalley on The Good Earth. So, Kath, we've got a very, very special guest today, haven't we?
We do. We've got Nerida Haynes from Lot 3 Organic down on the Mornington Peninsula. Good morning, Nerida.
Hi there. How's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Go on, yeah, keep going.
Oh, okay.
Don't mind me. I'm only here next to you.
Okay. Nerida works on a Lot 3 farm, which is an organic farm that focuses on diversity and sustainability down on the Mornington Peninsula. They're committed to organic horticultural practices and promoting locally grown produce. The farm became certified organic in 2014. Their products include heirloom apple varieties, pear, nashi, stone fruit, citrus, avocado, kiwis and quince.
Oh, my mouth's watering already.
Yeah. They also have olive oil. They have 5 varieties of olives that they use for olive oil, eggs and honey, which would interest you,
yep.
Mike. And it's definitely quality over quantity, but the local retailers are understanding and they sell a lot of produce locally.
So welcome to the show, Nerida.
Thank you. Good to be with you. It sounds like we do so much, but yeah, I guess it's just some like there's 2 kiwi fruit vines. So
I thought you were going to say 2 kiwi fruits then. Yeah. I thought, gee, that is small.
Just a bit of an overview of what kind of quantities, I guess. Like, yeah, there's 2 kiwi fruit vines, but about 20 quince trees. So
I love quince. Yeah.
Yeah, they're a bit underrated, I think. They're they're good.
Quinces make the best apple pie.
Not a quince pie, but an apple pie.
Well, quince and apple.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Just
delicious.
Yeah, just a couple of quinces in with apples. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. You have no idea how it improves the flavour.
All right.
In fact, the best apple pie, according to somebody I met, or might have seen on TV once, was the secret to the really good apple pie is to use quince and pears.
Okay. That's an even more diverse apple pie.
Clever.
Okay, well, Nerida could supply you with any of them, really, so there you go.
I'll swap us some of my quinces.
Yes.
the champion and what's the other one? Oh, I can't think of the other variety, but, yeah, there's 2 varieties. One takes a really long time to ripen.
Yep.
But, yeah, and then there's just sort of the standard one. Yeah, they're pretty sort of low maintenance. You know, great trees, really.
Yeah, and birds don't get to them as much as they do with other fruit because the skins are a bit harder and a bit sort of weird, so birds tend not to actually peck the fruit as much.
Yeah, we net ours.
Oh, okay.
And even if they do peck it, they tend not to go off very very quickly. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So what sort of yield would you get off those, Nerida?
I believe the 2015 harvest was around 300 kg.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
They're prolific. Yeah.
All right.
They're
okay.
Really good. They're just hard to peel.
Yeah. And we sold some to some local wineries, and we were doing bulk rates to a few of the bigger retailers. And there's a guy who makes quince paste who is trying lower on the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
He's trialing different quince paste recipes, and trying to make a local organic quince paste with low sugar. So we'll have to
look
out for that one.
That was some cheese and wine, couldn't we?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I like quince paste. It takes a long time to make, but it's worth it.
It's worth the effort?
Especially when I go up to my mate's place who makes homemade cheese and we swap.
Oh,
and then, of
that
course,
would be beneficial.
We have to actually share each other's produce over a plaster to agree.
Yes, of course you do, yes.
Oh, so they go together.
They do. They're really, really good. So you've got heirloom apple varieties, you've got pear nashi. So how many different apple varieties do you have?
There's probably maybe even up to 10. So some of them there's just one of. I think there's a Ribston pippin that we've just planted this year.
Awesome.
One, there's the Mutsu is a green Granny Smith type of one. But most of them are sort of dessert eating apples.
Okay, yep. So and you're sort of probably the well known sort of heritage varieties, I suppose. There's a few around and that you can get from different organic producers and different farms.
Mm.
So they're starting to become more and more popular. But so that's a lot of varieties. And the same with all the others. You've got lots of different varieties. I mean, I love the fact that you've got 5 varieties of olives. I've got 2. So what's the difference between them? Have you tried the oil from the different trees? Is there a different flavour or anything?
Yeah, there's definitely some that are more sweet and some that are more bitter. So with the mixing of them, it's getting that balance for the right flavour.
Yep.
I think last year was a really good year for the olive oil. It did come second in the Royal Melbourne Show. The
wow, okay.
2014 harvest for it's
very good.
The owner's very proud about that one. I couldn't say what exactly that. I think it's the Picante. How's that for the Italian picante?
Picante. I don't know. I can't say it either.
Picante.
Yeah, something like that.
Say it like you mean it.
And yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, who actually makes the olive oil? So, you guys are harvesting it. Is it the farm
pressed
staff
on site?
That are pressing it and processing it, or do you send it off site, or how's that happen?
Yeah, there's an off-site processing, which, my boss, who works on several properties that do olives, so, yeah, he will just get them, you know, batch processed together, like, you know, keeping them separate. But, that's sort of a big job to do in sort of May, June, when all the olives are picked. But yeah, at the Lot 3 farm, it's all hand harvested and good fun picking those olives.
It would be time consuming, wouldn't
so Lot 3 farm really is a low mechanization and organic. So does that mean that there's a lot more sort of hard work, you know, people just working that little bit harder to make sure it all happens properly, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, that's a good point, that the way it's sort of set up as more of a interest and, you know, in with the irrigation and the sort of adding on the different different parts of the orchard over time, it's not sort of set up for a fully, you know, mechanized commercial operation. So naturally, yeah, there is a little bit more, it is more labour intensive, but because, yeah, you're using organic methods, you know, when you time things right and you are sort of working with the natural systems, then, you know, that does sort of reduce, I guess, the potential workload, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, it's just sort of
so about working with nature rather than against it.
Yeah, and that's where sort of efficiencies are going to come in with the organic system.
Yeah, so just so you've been involved in horticulture for a long time, and obviously you may not have been involved in pure organic areas all that time. So what's the biggest difference from a practical point of view between, say, the non-organic or traditional methods and the organic methods that you're working in now?
I think just with the organic certification standard, that sort of gives you a guideline and a framework around what you're doing to just sort of keep in mind. So, for instance, you know, if you are composting, putting compost on your fruit trees, which, you know, a lot of orchards would do, then with our compost, we're just sort of thinking about what's gone into it, how long it's been composted for, and sort of being able to sort of trace that back, I guess. So
that's a good point, actually, because you don't have, because you people often don't think of that. They go, oh, well, I've just got to get some compost in, but you've actually got to make sure that compost is
organic.
Is organic and or it doesn't have stuff in it that you don't want it to have in it, which a lot of people, and myself included, I, you know, get down to local stables occasionally and pick up some horse manure and stuff, and you think, well, have they been dosing these horses or something, or have they been doing
or
hormone
treatments?
Yeah,
you need to ask those questions.
Yeah, so yeah, and people quite often don't think about that. So that traceability. Yeah.
So that framework gives you that reminder or that structure to go back to, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what I've found. Different about working with in the organic side of things. Yeah, just having that awareness of where things are coming from and where, you know, things like you were saying that there could be contaminants that are way further down the line than, you know, you sort of just want to go and do the task. But, yeah, it's sort of tracing it back.
Mm. Okay.
And you reckon that's, you know, obviously if you're in a commercial operation and stuff, you're trying to get that certification for commercial reasons and also to make sure that you're following best practices and stuff. But how would you think that would be able to be translated into somebody who's running just a little, you know, backyard and a couple of fruit trees and you know, a few fruit and veggies? How would they go about making sure that their stuff is organic as possible or that they're following, you know, what are considered good practices?
The certification by the OGA, which is the Organic Growers Australia, can be sort of pared down to more of a hobby farm or small enterprise farm. So it's pretty adaptable, and it's how it's set up that usually it's inbuilt flexibility, and just say, you know, that your compost, you're sort of not sure about where it's from, then, that it may have contaminants in it, then, perhaps just turning it over for a few months and letting the compost break those contaminants down, is an organic way of dealing with that situation.
Okay, so it gives you techniques and methods to help deal with those sorts of things. So it's not just a black and white sort of thing. It's, you know, here's some of the things you can do to
there's workarounds.
So workarounds or treatments that you can do that are simple that will retain the organic practice, if you like.
And I think that would just leave it baking a little bit longer. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's sometimes how you get the flavour in. And I think that a lot of just sort of, you know, your average Joe can relate to that practical aspect of it rather than just sort of having it rammed down the throats that there's only one way to do it.
Mm.
And, you know, because horticulture is so much about, there's, you know, many ways to do it. And, yeah, just having those kind of resources to be able to make a good decision.
Mm. What about pest and disease control? Do you find, is there anything that stands out that limits or challenges you by having to do it organically?
I guess with the resistance build-up, you know, the insect populations will have after using certain pesticide, you know, can happen within a few generations. But I guess when you're doing it organically and you're just putting the wood ash on pear and cherry slug.
I hate pear and cherry slug. It's the bane of my existence. Yeah.
Well, that's sort of probably not going to sort of come into its own for another few months yet, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
But, yeah, so there's not going to be any chair and peri slug.
No, don't worry. I say it all the time, chair and peri slug, instead of pear and cherry slug. It's a horrible name.
So with the wood ash, how do you use that to treat the trees? How are you applying the wood ash?
It's pretty much just sprinkling it on because the trees are espaliered. It's just and you know, most of them are, you know, it's reachable. So your hand height, you're just getting a good coverage and not doing it on a rainy day.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair enough too. Yeah. I tried using, someone told me I could use flour on mine.
Okay.
That was a mistake. The flour, just normal plain flour, and I just threw it up all over the tree and you know, got covered in flour. And then, of course, it rained a bit and it just went like clag.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
And I was out there with the hose washing it all off again.
Oh, dear.
But having said that, it did get rid of them.
All right.
Yeah, so.
So for those that don't know, the theory behind the wood ash is that it takes any moisture out of the slug.
Yeah.
And
removes the coating, and then the birds can get at them.
Okay, all right.
So it's a double whammy. You bring some more birds in, and they, you know, eat the bugs, and then turn them into compost.
Yeah, well, the birds and the fruit trees is definitely the double-edged sword.
Yep.
Because a lot of the fruit trees at Lot 3 Farm are netted or undercovered. The aphids and those kind of pests definitely can quickly build up. So when you have this situation where there is staff to monitor these things and you can catch them early enough. What you're using on the pest first to get that knockdown is pretty important. So if you would, to go crazy with something stronger, then, it still might sort of have the same effect. So sometimes it's just about keeping the populations down rather than getting rid of them.
Yeah, the last thing you want to do is knock off the predators at the same time.
Yes.
So
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the we've just got this system going under the fruit trees in like the rows where the trees are to encourage beneficial predators into the orchard. The umbel type flowers.
Yes.
Yeah, so your parsley and your fennel and those kind of species attract the predatory wasps and things that will feed on the pests. So yeah, we've got a lot of those going at the moment.
Well, I'm right because I've got parsley growing everywhere. It's growing in the eaves, I think now.
Winter ground cover.
Yeah, it is a winter ground cover. It's just everywhere. It's self seeds all over the place.
Mm, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Coming into flower now.
Oh yeah, yeah, and it's setting. Well, it sort of comes in and out of flower almost all year. Ours, it just keeps going and going and going. It's just seeds everywhere, and it's actually almost becoming an invasive weed.
I did have it as an invasive weed out the back until we built and then we smothered it all. So, and now I struggle to get it to regrow. So
probably no sun now.
Frustrating.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it has changed a lot. So yeah.
Heaps of tabbouleh, heaps of extra parsley and Italian sauces and all that sort of stuff, and we're drying it and giving it away to people and all sorts of things.
Yep.
Oh, you want a slice of bread? Here, have some parsley on it.
Yes. Yeah. You can never have too much parsley. So you're growing it as a understory crop. Is that what you're doing for the?
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. And then you've got your borage and a few wildflowers and things just to keep the bees happy and keep the pollination up. And it's mown in between the trees. Yeah, then we try and keep the understory pretty diverse and occasionally go through and remove some of the grassy weeds. But, yeah, just sort of keep that diversity in there and give the chooks something to scratch around in.
Yeah. Okay.
How many chooks do you keep on the property?
Oh, there's just five, and they're just young'uns and started laying a few a month or so ago.
Yep.
At least five eggs a day.
So the actual formal orchard area where we've got all the espalier trees is actually a small part of the overall Lot 3 farm, yeah?
That's right. So the quinces are all out in the open and the citrus is all out in the open and, the other bits and pieces, olives and things are also in different areas of the farm.
Mm-hmm.
But, chooks are the only animals there. Yeah.
Apart from the bees.
Yeah, plenty of bees.
Bees and foxes. So do you do any annual crops like traditional veggie crops or is it mainly the fruit?
Mainly the fruit.
So how long have you been there and how did you get onto it in the first place?
I have been working there since January last year or this year.
Okay.
That was
a good time to go in there at harvest time. You did that well.
When I started, I think my first day I was picking some lovely berries or something. Yeah, that was definitely timed very well. But, I started there and I've been probably working there 2 or 3 days a week. Yeah, I studied at Burnley a few years before that and done, my own version of the veggie garden, but food – production isn't really my background, so it's been really interesting to learn about how organic farming is done, and it's been a great place to do it.
And I suppose you've had that full circle now that you've been there for over 12 months to see the whole, not just come in and pick strawberries, but go through the whole process right over the seasons.
Yeah, and I think spring's probably been my favourite, just for as far as the, like, just sort of how busy it is and how everything, you can see everything from the get-go, from their mm-hmm. winter sleep. So yeah, it is really great, I guess. But I guess sort of autumn's when there's just so much picking to be done.
It's always the challenge, isn't it? Is actually bringing in the harvest. It's quite easy to start things off and grow things and look after things when everything's kicking along and everything, and there's not that much to do in some ways.
Yeah.
But then come harvest time, you've got to be on the ball, and
you've
otherwise
got to be out there and
otherwise
do it.
All you see it all just go to waste effectively.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, timing with it, especially with the olives when you got to pick them with their oil content can drop suddenly with the fruit and and with your storage, if you've got like a whole lot of nectarines coming in at once, they're not going to store that well. So yeah, it's getting the getting your market set up as well. So yeah, making sure that you got your retailers interested in having that time, not them knowing that you're going to have this type of fruit available at this time too.
Yep.
So giving them the heads up of what's coming in and timing over what's going to be harvested and when, is that, do you communicate that to the suppliers?
Yeah, a bit of a lead-in time, is definitely worthwhile. And sometimes that's, it's easy to sort of say, they're going to be ready in a few weeks. But, it's the tasting and the quality and all of that comes into it too.
Okay.
But definitely something that the retailers need to know in advance.
So with Lot 3 Farm, do they do farm gate sales, or is it all just out to wholesalers and retailers?
It's mainly through just a few select local retailers. With the smaller quantities, sort of how it works. But on the peninsula, there's so many people doing the farm gate sales, and at the markets and things, and fundraising for this. Like, they'll just have a farm gate for a fundraising stall for the school, or we've been involved in a couple of those type things too.
Okay, so if you're a foodie and you're down on the peninsula, just keep an eye out for Lot 3.
Yeah, just when you're driving around, you've got to have your eye out. Yeah.
All those specialists in your food shops. And
I don't know if the avocados would be on the bargain table. They're a bit of a
oh, really?
They're so good. They're just so creamy and delicious.
Well, it's pretty good being able to grow avocados down on the peninsula. Mm, I mean, that's
impressive.
I've got a small one in my greenhouse, but that's, it struggles. Mm. But I'm thinking about putting it outside again, but it's quite a challenge to grow avocado successfully in Victoria, especially southern Victoria.
Mm.
I've got
a client that nothing to do with me producing the avocados, but they've got a fantastic avocado tree in their backyard that was just laden.
Excellent.
Oh, it was massive. I've never seen anything like it before. But, and that was in St Kilda, so.
Okay.
Hmm.
I was hope for mine yet.
Mm, there is hope for yours yet.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm.
So, there's no farm gate sales. So if people want to get hold of the produce, they go to the local retailers or specialty stores or something down on the peninsula and everything. Is there any plans in the future to expand up a bit more and maybe potentially offer some direct to public, or you don't think that's really feasible?
I guess, it's sort of a, privately owned farm where there's a residence on it, and just having that part of it makes it a bit tricky. But going into different retailers or wholesalers in the cities, what I would like to see, just sort of developing those markets. Yeah, on the peninsula, I think, yeah, there is, people are a little bit spoiled. Like, there is a lot more produce around.
It's a bit like Yarra Valley, really, isn't it, in some ways?
Yes.
So it'd be nice to share that with the city folk, I think.
Yeah. So what's in the future? Well, so you're doing 2 days a week, so what else do you do to occupy your time and hone your skills?
The other places that I work are sort of in, is estate gardens, I guess, and there is fruit trees on them too. So, yeah, I've, honed my skills in horticulture, I guess, so over this time and over the years, and, it's going well and hopefully continues to.
So have you been able to take some of the lessons learnt from the Lot 3 farm and apply those to some of the other clients and things and improve the quality of what they're doing there as well?
Yeah, hopefully that is part of the knowledge sharing. And I know it has been done from my boss and other people that I work with, which is really great. But they're sort of different properties with different requirements, I guess. And we've been doing a lot of trialing of the or plant-based and organic herbicide.
Yep.
And so that's been good to trial that at different places with different weeds.
So okay. When you say estate gardens, Nerida, you mean so just like large house estates that are just informal pleasure gardens? Is that what you're looking after? Yeah.
That's pretty much in a nutshell. So a few in Redhill and Shoreham and
nice.
Mainly on that sort of side of the peninsula rather than the bay side, which is where the great soil is, and these landholders that are passionate about their gardens, and it's great to work in some of these places that have the budget to match.
Exactly, yeah. It's nice to have money occasionally, isn't it? Yeah.
It is nice to have money occasionally.
Yeah. So one last question just before we let you go. If you could give just your average backyard gardener one piece of advice on how to improve their garden using organic methods, what would it be?
Oh, that's a good one.
I always save the hard one for the last.
It's a good ploy. I would say... Oh, it's a bit of a cliche, but just try to hone in on your observation of what's going on with the plants and with the season and with the environment that you're working in. So you can sort of look at it and have in mind what's sort of been, what's present, what might happen, and just try and give it some a bit of critical thinking treatment.
Love and attention, yeah?
Yeah, well, there's, maybe sing to it as well.
Bit of kumbaya.
Yeah, well, it can't hurt. People go, singing to your plants, that's crazy, mate. You can't, what good does it do? You go, well, it might not do any good, but I feel better. So,
well, there
not?
Is that.
Yeah.
So you're saying observations. So have a look around.
That's sometimes just at least the best place to start. And that there is and also just keeping in mind that you might think, I can solve this problem by doing X, Y, and Z, but there's also LMNOP that you could do as well. Like there's,
okay.
There is. That's what it seems with horticulture, that there's a lot of ways to solve
so many
the
ways
problem.
To skin a cat.
Yeah, well, so many ways to peel an orange. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to skin a cat out in the garden, do you?
Possibly not, but it's good old fashioned time.
Inside.
It is. All right, look, we've been chatting to Nerida Hames from Lot 3 Farm on 94.1 FM 3WBC. It's been great to have you on the show, Nerida, and I'm sure we're going to catch up with you again a bit later on. We've got, it sounds like you've got a lot of things that you can talk about.
We could talk to Nerida about re-veg next time.
Yeah, and a lot of, yeah, exactly, re-veg, which was her other life, which we didn't even touch on.
Yes.
So perhaps we'll get you back on another day and we'll talk about the re-veg projects and stuff that you've been working on in the past and even now.
Mm. Love to. Thanks, Michael and Kathy. I've enjoyed our chat and, catch up again soon.
Okay.
Yep, excellent.
Thanks very much.
All right, so that was Nerida Hames from Lot 3 Farm, and get down to Cornish Peninsula and check out a few of the little specialty shops and retailers if you want to sample their produce. And when we come back, it's going to be more of our crazy show.
Mm.
You've been on, you still are on, 94.1 FM.
3WBC on the Good Earth with Mike O'Connell and Kath Smalley.
That's what it is, yeah. Yes. We'll be back after this.
Okay.